On August 28, 1963, 250,000 people marched on Washington protesting unequal treatment of blacks compared to whites when it comes to economic and social rights. Here's part of the speech they heard that day. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream that one day even the state of Mississippi, a desert state, sweltering with the heat of injustice and oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream that my four children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day every valley shall be exalted and every hill and mountain shall be made low. The rough places will be made plain and the crooked places will be made straight. And the glory of the Lord shall be revealed and all flesh shall see it together. I have a dream today. This is the faith that I will go back to the South with. With this faith, we will be able to hew out of the mountain of despair a stone of hope. With this faith, we will be able to transform the jangling discords of our nation into a beautiful symphony of brotherhood. With this faith, we will be able to work together, to pray together, to struggle together, to go to jail together, to stand up for freedom together, knowing that we will be free one day. I have a dream. And when this happens, we will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, free at last, thank God Almighty, we are free at last. Many of you will recognize this speech. It was delivered by Martin Luther King Jr., the acclaimed leader of the Black Civil Rights Movement, and front cover says it all. In this month of February, which is Black History Month, it is good to remember that human rights is something that must be fought for in every generation. Racism continues to be a huge problem in many places of the world, including our own Canada. Things may have improved in many ways, but there continue to be challenges. As soon as some leader is voted in who polarizes people, racists see this as an opportunity to act out their hate against all who are different. Whether it's the color of their skin, their religion, their gender, their sexual orientation, their culture, whatever. Think about Quebec. Think about Pittsburgh. Think about the Charlton African Methodist Church shootings. Think about the Yonge Street van attack and Danforth Street shootings. Think about how long it took to put sufficient resources into the murders in the gay village here in Toronto, for example. Think about the Yellow Vest movement from out west protesting against immigrants to Canada. Now, even though there were great hopes for the civil rights movement, King also experienced great opposition. And this opposition was not only from whites, but from blacks also. Some felt he wasn't militant enough. Some felt he was too open to reconciliation and friendship with the enemy. Some felt that more forceful means were necessary to achieve their goals. King himself also experienced threats against his life. In fact, he had this mysterious premonition that he would not survive to see his hopes for the movement fulfilled. Like Jesus, who was crucified, and like many prophets killed because of their stand on justice, King foresaw this to be his own fate too. One of his final speeches, for example, he's talking this image of Moses, whom he identifies with, leading the people to the promised land out of slavery, and Moses going up on a hill, which is in the account in the scriptures, and seeing the promised land and knowing he himself will not make it, but he has brought his people to this point, and King identifying himself in some ways with the whole movement, with Moses. But whatever would happen, King was living by faith. Faith in the promise of love, whatever the cost. Love had to win. And in order for love to win, it had to bridge as many divisions as possible. So what are those divisions in your life and in mine? Where are those places and spaces we had not had the passion or the grace or the willingness to love more courageously? We all have those places and spaces in our lives, we do. Many of us continue to live them. Strained and fractured relationships, situations we feel we cannot change even as we have tried, failures to love, which have cost us negatively, failures to love. And so, too often, we've just given up or just go with the flow of the status quo. We're not prepared to try any harder because maybe we don't believe it can make any difference for good in the end. Maybe we've lost our faith in the miraculous power of love, which tries again and again in ever new and creative ways to build bridges toward new places in relationships and in a way we think and feel toward others. Can things really change? Honestly, can things really change? How much will it cost us? Well, we come to church. We gather as community. Why? Well, we need to get inspired and empowered to build up some fresh faith and hope in the promise of love to make positive change in the world through the hands, feet, and heart of Jesus, which we are called to be. Let me say that again. We need to get inspired and empowered to build up some fresh faith and hope in the promise of love to make positive change in the world through the hands, feet, and heart of Jesus, which we are called to be. So what would this look like? What would this look like? How can we get some inspiration today, to build on King's legacy? Let's ponder our scripture readings more closely. Our Old Testament reading from Genesis presents us, as we mentioned a little earlier, with a climactic moment in the relationship of Joseph and his brothers. They are all of them are sons of Jacob, but because of serious conflict and betrayal, and Jacob has not been a good example of it either, because of all this, Joseph has ended up in Egypt. He's been sold into slavery and now presumed dead, while the rest of the brothers make their life without having to deal with Joseph anymore. His mother is long dead by now. But Joseph's journey becomes a fascinating one where he grows up and he learns some powerful, life-transforming lessons. His life of privilege, being his father's favorite, it's taken from him, and he's forced to be a slave in a foreign nation. He experiences mistreatment, injustice, imprisonment. But rather than grow bitter or angry or shut down to any future possibilities, I mean, I'm sure he had his moments. I'm sure he had his moments, but rather than rest in this bitterness or anger or being shut down to any future possibilities, he somehow finds the courage, the strength, and the grace. Like King, in the face of constant opposition, the courage, the grace, the strength to keep believing good things are possible. For Joseph, like King, his faith in God is at the core. For him, faith in God is at the core. Joseph somehow comes to a faith that God can resurrect new possibilities of love even in the worst situations and through the worst kinds of injustice and betrayal, that somehow God can resurrect new possibilities of love still. God is that powerful in God's love for him that Joseph will not be abandoned, but empowered through all he goes through. Somehow all these negative experiences can somehow be integrated into something positive. Now that takes a lot of faith. And so it is, so it is. Imagine this final scene with his brothers as we heard it read. They had totally done him in, and now he, Joseph, has become an important official in Egypt. He is in power, and he has all the power to do with them whatever he decides. And certainly, he can make them grovel. He can make them suffer. But instead, we encounter a man whose heart is so full of love, that he cannot control himself even. We're told his weeping is so loud, so profuse, that it's heard throughout the palace. But now love for Joseph, and in reality, it's not just emotion or sentiment. It's about creating new possibilities past the divisions and the fractured relationships. Do not be distressed or angry with yourselves because you sold me here, he tells them. For God sent me before you to preserve life. And so Joseph will save his family from sure starvation, and he will sponsor them all as refugees to Egypt. What a beautiful story. It's one of those gospel moments in the Old Testament. And we see this very same spirit of love in the revelation of Jesus in our gospel reading. King clearly internalized Jesus' gospel in his whole approach. There is a power commonly known, it's the power we most often think of as force or coercion or the ability to make people do what you want or at least cause them to suffer because they've harmed you. That's power as we commonly know it. But then there is a different kind of power, let's call it a gospel power, where you resist playing by your enemy's rules. Everyone knows tit for tat. Someone strikes you, you strike them back because they've gotten to you. You do to others what they've done to you, or do them first as a preemptive strike, or worse, showing your superior ability to crush them and humiliate them because you have the power to do so and because they've gotten to you really, really deeply. They've hurt you. But what if you're up against the wall? And what if your options are either strike back if you can, or you strike at anyone else in your life that you have some power over, or you internalize the abuse as defeat and humiliation, and this crushes you inside? Or, what if you find the kind of power and inspiration to hold your head high and turn the other cheek? Hold your head high and turn the other cheek. They take your coat, you give them your cloak as well. They curse you, but you bless them back. They hate you and wish you harm, but you pray for them. They want to take from you, but you keep giving generously, trusting in a larger good to bless you. That's the Jesus way. And as Jesus says, that is God's way. But how does that win? How does that win? It wins because instead of being corrupted by the hate or the spite or the toxic resentment of those who want to harm you, your counter-strike of love will liberate you from the chains of the vicious cycle of retaliation. It will liberate you from the vicious cycle. And more than that, if there's enough love, your counterstrike of love may inspire some of them, maybe it will, to rethink their hate, maybe let go a little their spite, and maybe begin a journey of healing. If anything is going to work to build a bridge over division, it will be such counterstrikes of love, rather than the same old hate back and forth until everyone's left shattered, wounded, polarized, miserable, and perpetually looking over their shoulder in fear. Those are the alternatives. We here in church are children of Jesus and children of King. When we discipline ourselves through prayer and personal commitment to refuse to strike back at those who strike at us, whether it's with their words, their actions, their sentiments, their attitudes, when we refuse to do that, it's personal commitment and prayer. When we do that, we are children of Jesus and children of King. We are inspired by love to discover creative ways to turn the other cheek so that we build a different way forward in our relationships. Through inspired leaders like Jesus, who speak it, teach it, and live it even when tortured and crucified. From the precursor of Jesus and Joseph. From contemporary exemplars like King and like Gandhi or Mandela or Malala Yousafzai, and there are others. Through such exemplars, we can find our own way in our own circles to be, quote, kind even to the ungrateful and the wicked, as Jesus says of God, kind even to the ungrateful and the wicked. Why? Because we believe that change is always a possibility, even in the worst circumstances. Granted, it takes a lot of faith in the power of love to believe that. And in some situations, we can feel we just don't have it. And so we need that constant inspiration. May we as individuals and with one another in community become inspirers of such faith in the promise of love, knowing that it may cost us. If it matters to us, it probably will cost us, but always in the end, the rewards will be greater than the cost. May we come to such faith ever more deeply. May we inspire one another here in community. And may love win out among us and in our personal lives again and again.